By the way, if you ever see me take out my iPhone, I'm not sending text messages. Okay? This is where my Bible is. And I was wanting to be able to quote something during my homily. But before I begin, I want to welcome back Mary Sage. Mary is... she has been our cantor for many years, and she was on a little bit of a medical leave for a while. I'd like to guide you on a reflection that has to do with our faith and also our politics. It's not going to be overly political. I'm not going to stand here or sit here and tell you to either vote for Trump or vote for Clinton. I never do that because I really do, you know, believe, and not only do I believe, this is the way that the bishops of the United States tell us we have to act, but I believe that them too, that the Catholic Church never tells you how to vote, but it tells you how we should form our consciences. And then when you form your conscience according to the gospel, then with that conscience, then you choose how you're going to vote based on your conscience. And it's precisely that I'd like to talk about, is the formation of conscience in one aspect of it. You see, let me give you a little bit of background. When in graduate school, I had many interests. I really love to study philosophy and theology and different, and especially the thing that fascinates me is the question of what does it mean to be a human being? And not only what does it mean to be a human being, but how ought we to live together? That's the famous definition of the philosopher Aristotle, who, when asked what is politics? And politics is actually the answer to a very simple question. How ought we to live together? What are the principles that are supposed to guide us? And the important part of politics is that it's interesting because I find it very curious that because we hold for the separation of church and state, we stretch that a little bit too much. Because you see, the separation of church and state is not the separation of religion from public life. That's something very different. Church and state means that what the founders of the United States were trying to do was to make sure that we didn't have a repeat of what happened in England. In England, there is an official church, a government church. It is the Anglican Church. And during the reign of Henry VIII and many several centuries afterwards, it was illegal to be a member of any other church. As a matter of fact, in medieval England after Henry VIII, if you were a Catholic, you were persecuted and killed and tortured. So that the founders of the country did not want, when we became independent, they did not want to have a state church. They thought that there should be a separation of church and state. But again, that is very different from thinking that religion must be separated from public life. And it can't be. It cannot be. Because how we live together has to be informed by our beliefs in God, but what we hold sacred. It's very interesting because, you see, the word religion, most of you know that I'm fascinated with etymologies. And the word religion, the history of the word religion, it's very simple, but it's very telling. The word religion comes from the prefix re, R-E, and legion, which is a variation of legare, which means to bind together. But when you put re in front of anything, you're always saying, do it again, right? So rewash, re-clean, repaint, okay? So anytime you put re in front, it's do it again. So religion, religare, re-bind together. Now, why would you have to rebind together anything? Because it was bound, it was together, but it came apart. And so you have to rebind it together. So whenever you have the word religion, broadly, what religion means is that we as human beings have to come up with the answer to the questions, what should we believe? What's the most important things in life? What is worthwhile? As a matter of fact, one of the other words that fascinates me is the word worship. Because again, if you take the word worship apart, it's the suffix ship means the art or practice of anything. Ship, like penmanship, authorship, craftsmanship. And the W-O-R of the first part of worship is a shortened way of saying worth, W-O-R-T-H. So when you worship, what you're doing is you're making clear to yourself and to others what the hierarchy of what is worthwhile should be. And so God is always worshipped because he is always first. So notice the relationship between the word religion, reconnecting, and reconnecting to what? To what is worth more than anything else in your entire in human life. Now, if you put those two things together, religion and worship, where do you get the ideas as to what should you reconnect to? Where do we get the whole notion of what is the most important things in life? What is the most important things in life? And of course, you get them from religion, because that's why you come to church. But there's also another place that you get it from. And the other place that you get it from is the culture. Because the culture that we live in tells you, by advertising and by even politics, it tells you what things are held in the culture to be of the highest prize. The highest prize. And for us, you notice that, because it's a constant tension, that what is important to us, we even have a nickname for it. It's called the American Dream. What's the American Dream? And all the kids, I constantly confront this. What do you want to do? What do you want to do in life? Oh, I want to be rich. I want to be popular. I want to be a movie star. I want to be. Notice the very culture is like they're marinating on something. You know, when you marinate a steak, you put it, they're immersed in it. And so what's happening is that the culture has become, in a sense, its own religion. Because notice what it's doing. It's providing answers to what ought you to hold as the highest worth. And the culture tells you that. What you ought to hold as the highest worth. And every time you turn your television on, you have expressions of what is worthwhile and what it's not. Okay? And so there's not, when you say the word religion, you actually, in your life, whether you know it or not, you have several competing religions coming at you in any given day. Like today, you come here to church and you hear the hierarchy of worth that Jesus taught. You hear that. And that is your religion. But the moment you walk outside and turn on the radio or turn on, you know, go to a movie or talk to people in the culture, you're going to be bombarded again by saying, well, what's worthwhile is maybe to be important, or why do we call them celebrities? Why does everybody want to get close to a celebrity? Notice it's almost an idealizing of a human being, and everybody wants to touch them or to be like them or to be like that. That's another way that the culture is telling you that this is what is worthwhile. You want to go up there. You want to reach that. And you want to make a lot of money. And you want to get the nicest things and all that stuff. Now, notice the comparison between the... And here we get into the gospel. Notice the comparison between the gospel that all of it, that is presenting a vision of a rich person and a poor person. Now, in the religion that the gospel is telling you, who is worth more? Or what is worth more? And what's worth more is not the wealth that the rich man had, but a different standard. And the different standard is the standard that God gives. That's why you have the judgment between of Abraham looking at the rich man, and the rich man is suffering while the poor man is given reward. And so you notice that you have the exact opposite. If you were to compare that that set of values, it's the direct opposite of the set of values that our culture generally has. And so I find that as people in our own culture, we are constantly confronted with two different types of people that we're supposed to be. And sometimes it's put this way: are you an American who happens to be a Catholic Christian, or are you a Catholic Christian who happens to be an American? Because there are quite a few of us who put our American, our faith in America, which I love, but we put that faith in America sometimes a little bit before God. And we let our consciences be formed by American principles rather than first and foremost by the gospel, which is what we call our religion. But notice what I'm doing. I'm saying that being an American has religious overtones. Why? Because it's reconnecting you to things that Americans find ultimately worthwhile. We worship. Okay? Now, what got me thinking into this whole thing? And at this point, I have to stop. I have to stop and I tell you that my brother Fernando. He's my younger brother by 2 years. My brother says to me, Mario, I asked you what time it was. I did not ask you for the history of the development of the clock. I am afraid that your pastor just goes crazy on how ideas are formed and stuff like that. But listen to, this is what triggered this whole homily. And that's why I'm holding my iPhone. The second reading and my admiration for the Declaration of Independence. Now you might say, what? Those two goes together? Yep, they do. Now, what is it that I admire about the Declaration of Independence? Because the Declaration of Independence produced this country and the culture that is forming our consciences. See, the whole thing is going, you are an American because the ideals put in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution have formed American culture. And American culture, you live in it, and so without you knowing it, it's forming your conscience, whether you know it or not. And here is where American culture and the Declaration of Independence, there is a kind of a minor crash between the Declaration of Independence and St. Paul. Now, where is that crash? Do you remember, first of all, that in the preamble, not the first sentence, but in the preamble of the Declaration of Independence, it says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, right? Now, what's another way of, what are they saying there? Basically, they're saying to you, we're not going to prove this. They're self-evident. We have faith in these things. We hold these truths in faith, self-evident. And what are those truths? Now, here they come. That all men are created equal. Now, where did they get that? Because that is not true in Islam. It's not true in Chinese culture. It's not true in Indian culture. It was not true in Roman culture. It's not true in any other culture that all men are created equal. You can look around and you can see that there is no such thing that all men are created equal. But where do they get that? They get that from the Christian tradition. The fathers of the country, when they went to write the Declaration of Independence, they were Christians. Different kinds of Christians, but they were Christians. They had been formed, their consciences, a lot by the gospel. That all men are created equal. And then it goes on. And they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable gifts, rights. Now notice, where do our rights come from? In many places, in many cultures, they come from the state. The state gives you the rights. For us, it is our Creator. It is not the state that grants us rights. That's why they are inalienable. You cannot give away. Even if you want to, you cannot give away your right to life, your right to liberty. You cannot give those away. And they are given to us by our Creator. But here comes the crash. Now I'm going to repeat the sentence. And they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. One, life, perfect, Christian, no problem. Liberty, perfect. Freedom, Christian, no problem. And the pursuit of happiness, problem. Real problem. Why? Let me ask you, the pursuit of happiness. Was the man in the gospel, the rich man, was he pursuing happiness? Think about it. Was the man in the gospel pursuing happiness? Yes. So without noticing, what happens all of a sudden is that our American culture religion is telling us that each of us has the primary right to pursue happiness. Now, where is the crash with St. Paul? Right here. Let me read you the beginning of the second reading. And I want you to keep your ears open to what are we supposed to be pursuing, using exactly the language of the Declaration of Independence. And it says, "But you, man of God, pursue," drumroll, "righteousness." Pursue righteousness, faith, love, patience, and gentleness. But look at the first one. Pursue righteousness. What does that mean? It means that the first pursuit of your life should be for you to be right with God. It means that your rightness with God is greater than your happiness. And the declaration is at odds there with the Christian tradition. Because the declaration, which has formed our culture, is telling us to pursue happiness, and the gospel is telling us that's not the most important thing to worship. We're supposed to be pursuing being right with God. That's the problem. That's the problem. And so I will leave you with just this. As we get into this political season, God only knows what's going to happen. Before you vote, and however you vote, it's up to you. But what is forming the values? First, what is it that you find of highest worth? Is it the pursuit of your own happiness? Or is it the pursuit of being right with God? Because the pursuit of being right with God, or righteousness, influences everything you do. It influences your choices. It influences the way you spend your money. It influences the way you behave towards your neighbor. It influences how you deal with the poor. It influences our attitudes towards immigrants. It influences towards our jobs, towards when you rest, when you don't. It influences everything. As Father Scott always says, that he, in defining the word stewardship, which basically is, what is our responsibility? How ought we to be righteous? Father Scott always says, everything you do, with everything you have, the moment after you say, "Lord Jesus, I believe." Ultimately, it's all linked together. It's all linked together. So as we come down this final stretch, just ask yourself, what are you voting on, and where are the values that you hold dear coming from? Where are they coming from? Are we too much sometimes Americans who happen to be Catholic, or are we Catholic Christians first? And insofar as America and our system, insofar as it reflects the ideals of the gospel, then I am an American. But I cannot put even America, as much as I love her, because I have been given, I'm a refugee. I'm from Cuba. I came as running away from communism, so I love this country. But I cannot ever put it above what Jesus has taught us. And according to Jesus, we're not supposed to pursue happiness. That's a nice thing. But our first and foremost pursuit is the pursuit of being right with God. Righteousness. Am I a Catholic who's an American? Or am I an American who is Catholic?